In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down, in the summer, in the city, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables tended by vendors on the side of the street making a living. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. The heat and temperature is rising much faster than your spine can contemplate all the implications upon you now. The summer, the city, things are heating up. In the summer, in the city, you have a half full cup. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously summery Island Chains Nation of New Zealand, where we are bathing in the warmth and our own sweat simultaneously. And my very special guest is Mark Passio. Mark, welcome to the program.
Vinnie, it's great to be back on your show here today.
Hey, I wanted to make a point that I cannot offer enough, like, you know how back in ancient Egypt, you know, people would like prostrate themselves at the masters and what have you. I kind of want to do that to you because I listened to that. What's it called? The New Age bullshit presentation, and like all the way through it, I was like, yes, yes, yes. I couldn't help myself.
I'm really glad you found the information valuable. No need to prostrate yourself or anyone else.
It's
just information out there for people to learn, that's all.
I know there's no need, but, you know, it doesn't stop the compulsion to just go, frick, Mark's awesome, and he sussed it, right? And I was just thinking about this. This is, like, one of my favorite new subjects now is this New Age religion. And we had award-winning journalist and author Ian Wishart from New Zealand on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie not too long ago. And he said part of the New World Order global government agenda, as outlined in his new book, Totalitaria, is to create a new religion. And that religion's ability to be accepted by everybody will only be accepted by everybody if all current religions are corrupted to a degree and that all of their principles get violated so that they can accept a new one into it, kind of thing.
Sure. You know, that's part of their plan is take down a lot of existing institutions that people once had faith in and push everybody into, you know, this universal hierarchical system that many researchers have called the New World Order, which does include both government and religion. There is a religious component to it, of course, for people of a more right brain or religious persuasion.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell me precisely exactly what this religion is going to look like? And is one of these underlying principles a denial of objective truth?
Well, absolutely. I think the very basis of this system is what I would call solipsism. It's another, you know, you can call it whatever you like and euphemize it however you like, but at the core, it is a solipsistic belief system. And what solipsism basically is the idea that there is no such thing as objective truth, that one can never really truly know anything, that everything is just a matter of perception and, you know, just seeing things from a different viewpoint or perception, but there's no actual objective reality. And at the core of the New Age movement, I would say it is solipsism, and most people don't even realize that and don't even know what that ideology is or what it's about. They've never even really made a study of it on their own. But when you look at a lot of New Age belief systems, that they have overwhelming similarities to solipsism in many cases.
What is the origin of solipsism?
You know, I don't really know, to be honest. I don't know where it came from or was derived from. It comes out of older philosophies, and I would expect that this goes back right into the ancient world. I feel that what the ideology really comes from is extreme right-brained imbalance. It is a chronic imbalance toward the right brain hemisphere, because the right brain hemisphere is the sort of the parallel processor of the brain that sees the big picture of everything and doesn't like focus in on laser-like precision on details and break things apart. Now, that's not to say that the right brain is not absolutely very, very important. The right brain, enables human intuition, and it enables us to see large patterns, which is extremely important. Patterns over time as well are very much to be able to see those are made possible by engagement in right brain modalities. Mm. However, when you go too deep into these modalities and you stay there chronically without engaging the logical capabilities of the left brain hemisphere and actually using the analytical capabilities of the left brain side of the mind, then you you fall into these patterns of naivete and belief and just acceptance of things that should not be accepted, that you should not be comfortable with. And then it becomes an ideology that just says, well, you're not going to get to the root of any of it. That's not even possible, because it's all just a matter of opinion and perception, and each person's opinion and perception is equally as valid as the next person, since there's absolutely no such thing as objective truth and reality. And I think that's a very dangerous slope to go down, because it basically leads to moral relativism by saying, since there is no truth, there is no such thing as truly the difference between right and wrong behavior. And that's the slippery slope that many people go down when they enter these new age belief systems.
Now, if you do think about this, and I've had a number of conversations with new agers along these lines, and the propensity to act like a religious person, I mean, you take the quintessential Bible thumper kind of thing, who doesn't really know the Bible, is incredibly aggressive whenever people question it, and has a justification for absolutely everything, even doing moral ill will towards other people. That was the exact same impression that I got from having arguments with these people. What my concern is that this religion, this cult, is growing, and it's evidenced all around me a lot of the time, because I see a lot of people in the so-called truth movement, who are supposed to, you know, be about the truth, buying into this, locked, stock, and barrel, and indeed defending it even when contrary facts are introduced, and saying that those facts aren't facts because facts don't exist, reality doesn't exist. They're trying to argue something that they cannot prove or justify. And that is what was inherently scary for me, is that how many regimes throughout history have committed absolute atrocities by saying that we can do all of this without any evidence, just because we say so, that is justified.
Right. Right. And, you know, that's really the basics for a eugenics-based society, and it's a basis for a totalitarian society, that the bulk of the population, since they're going to be buying into this right-brained imbalanced religion, this global religion, are never going to resist, because resistance is something that they claim is anathema and should never be practiced and should never be engaged in. Again, it's a religion of total acceptance of everything, including evil. And even they'll say it's not even evil. They'll claim that there's no such thing as good or evil. So everything is just an experience in this religion, and therefore all is allowed. Everything is, you know, should be permitted and accepted. And again, I think there's no discernment in an ideology like that. What I've advocated from day one is discernment and understanding the differences between objective right and objective wrong, and then using our willpower, you know, and our care, our true compassion, to really choose willfully and actively between those two modalities of behavior and choose the moral right over the moral wrong in all instances in our lives. That wouldn't even be possible in the quote-unquote New Age religion because, again, since it takes on this ideology of that there is no objective truth, by definition, then there's no such thing as true right or wrong. And you hear a lot of this rhetoric in the movement through a lot of the gurus and teachers because they're actually trying to actively negate the concept of right and wrong. I hear people who follow a lot of these teachings constantly, all day long, you know, denying that there is such a thing as objective right and wrong, that these are dualistic, quote unquote. These are dualistic concepts, and they should be rejected as having a dualistic nature because dualism is an illusion. And while I definitely think all the different things that divide humanity into separate groups and, you know, like race and you know, different cultural religions and political ideologies and, you know, age and, you know, culture, all these things are different ways of dividing people, and it's a divide and conquer strategy. But when it comes to right and wrong, that is a real duality that exists in nature. And that's what I don't think many people who subscribe to New Age belief systems understand, or they don't want to understand, because you have to understand, well, yeah, humanity really truly is one. We are all one. I don't deny that concept, and all the ways that we see each other in a dualistic mindset, I do think sort of needs to be cast to the side, and we need to see ourselves as one living human family. I've said that from day one as well. But that doesn't mean you don't use your discernment to understand that there's absolutely a difference in behavior. And there's a difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. That type of dualism is real and needs to be understood. And we have to use our discernment to recognize that distinction and then choose between it.
This is correct. And I think that morality, and you use two words in your presentation, which I will never forget and I will use constantly from now on, these two words, moral obligation. Right. This was very important for me because I have, I guess I'm starting to adopt certain religious beliefs, practices, and so on and so forth, yet I'm not strictly adhering to any religious regime. I'm simply taking the grain of truth out of religions that I see and discard the whole beachfront of lies. You know what I'm saying?
And sure.
It occurs to me that what is happening with this New Age religion is that the sense of moral obligation is kind of like it has an ironic existence to them in that they will say that good and evil doesn't exist, and yet when you have a look at who this person is and what they do, they're actually mostly doing good in their life. You know, they're making health products, or they're helping people, sure, or they're meditating, or they're taking care of their family, or something of this nature, yet they say that they don't believe in good and evil. And I say, then why, if you don't believe that there's any such thing as good or evil, are you not doing equally as much evil than good? Okay? Unless your belief structure doesn't actually match what you're doing in your life.
Right. And there's that internal opposition that exists, you know, internally in their own, you know, aspects of their personality. Like you said, what they say that they are holding in their mind because of this belief system doesn't really jibe with their behavior in real life. You know, and that's, you know, you could prove that there's really no such thing as hardcore solipsist, but, you know, in nature, you know, and by just saying, well, would you be okay as a solipsist if I just attack you randomly and do some bodily harm to you for no reason? And no solipsist will say, yeah, that's fine, that's okay. You know, well, if there's no such thing as truth, then obviously it can't be true that I shouldn't do that or that I have no right to do that, because there would be no right or wrong, because it wouldn't be true that that's wrong. So then why would you have a problem if I did something like that? You know, it's an argument many people have brought up, and I think it definitely holds a lot of weight. And people don't even think about it at that simple level that, you know, obviously you can't really truly believe that because, again, your behavior, you know, contradicts it. You say you want certain things to be in place that go along with the concept of right and wrong, but you know your words say otherwise. Absolutely, I see that contradiction as well.
It is a religion of constant contradictions, and I have this theory that this contradiction that they're trying to make here is merely kind of like a blanket all effect. So let's say, for example, you were a totalitarian psychopathic scum, right? And you wanted to dominate society. And traditionally, how you dominate society is you just take people's guns. Then they just can't resist you. What's happening now is even more dangerous. They don't even have to confiscate your guns. They can just convince you that taking up arms to defend yourself won't help you defend yourself.
Or that's always wrong, because they'll claim that kind of defensive capacity to use force against an aggressor is violence, which my work has really tried to hammer home the distinction, the absolute distinction and total opposition, the total antithesis between force and violence. These are polar opposites. They are nothing like one another. Force is always used in a defensive capacity and not as an aggressor. You're not initiating force if you're using it defensively. Violence is so because it is the initiation of undue force that one had no moral right to ever take to begin with. So it matters who begins the aggressive act. Okay, that's the person who's committing the violence, and the person who would be responding by protecting their body with the amount of physical force required to repel or put down that attack is responding with defensive usage of force and not with violence. And this is a distinction that many quote-unquote new agers do not recognize and want to say that both of those acts, the initial aggressive act and the defensive retaliation using force, equate as violence. And I'm trying to explain to people, no, they do not. The initial act of aggression is violence, and the return act of using enough defensive force to repel that attack, that initiation of violence, is simply the usage of force in a moral capacity.
Now, when we talk about force in terms of a use of moral capacity, one thing that was occurring to me, or I was thinking about it just before coming on the show today, is about communists, like socialists in New Zealand, who go out and accuse people of being racist. You're racist, you can't say that. You're racist, you can't do this. And I was just thinking, how far does that go? And how ironic is it that you've got a fascist calling somebody a racist?
Right.
Because they're trying to control what you can say, what you can do, what you can think. I mean, I'm not racist, but I think that I'm wondering, should I fight for people's right to be wrong, you know? Or should, because what I find is happening is that it's not an actual education campaign about being why racism is wrong. It's simply racism is wrong, thought crime.
Right. You know, I think a lot of this is coming under the banner of trying to shut down a speech that goes in opposition to the status quo and goes in opposition to the control system. You know, they're trying to make dissenting speech a crime overall. And one of the best ways that they're going about doing it, the best manipulative tactic that they're using, is to try to equate this with absolute violent extremism and or racism, when obviously nothing can be further from the truth. Not saying there may not be people who are like that in any community, but the truth community is not advocating any of those things. What most of the alternative researchers and alternative research community are advocating is simply to end human slavery and to truly move into a period of true human freedom by eliminating this control system, getting rid of it as a system that doesn't serve humanity, it doesn't serve who we are whatsoever. The people who want to cling on to these old and outdated and outmoded belief systems of authority and control and government, etc., and monetary systems, these people are going to use any ad hominem attack that they feel is required or that they think will get people onto their side and see their opposition as violent extremists or as racists or homophobes words or whatever other things that they want to concoct and say about the people who are really speaking out against these immoral institutions that are clinging on for dear life in the modern day. But really, we know what the truth is, and the truth is that we're just telling it like it really is, even if it may offend some people who are, again, believers in the slavery system. See, that's what I've been really trying to just stop using euphemisms and say how it really is in reality. So, you know, I don't even want to call people statists anymore or call them, you know, believers in government. What they are supporters of slavery. That's what people have to recognize, that anyone who believes in government is. They support the concept that this imaginary thing called authority exists and is vested in certain individuals or groups of individuals, and they are masters who have a moral right to issue commands when all other people are their subjects who have a moral obligation to obey their commands. This is an illusory concept that does not exist in nature. It doesn't exist in reality. And what it really is slavery, if we're not euphemizing and trying to give it a nice name and calling it authority or government. It is human slavery, if we're being honest with ourselves. So that's kind of, you know, what I see them just trying to do. Anybody who's truly talking out in opposition to slavery, they have to paint as a extremist or a quote racist. It's a very, very desperate tactic that they're using, and I think many people are really seeing through it, and it's not going to be working as effectively as more and more people wake up and come online in consciousness.
Let's hope so. There's a concept out there that I've been looking at more recently, is that people don't want to be slaves, yet they're addicted to it, much like a drug or alcohol. Sure. Or something of that nature. It's an addiction. And before you can give up an addiction, you have to stop living in denial. I don't have
That's
a problem.
Right.
Slavery doesn't exist. But it does. You are drinking too much slavery from that cup. you know? Put it down, mate. Okay?
Sure.
Stop drinking that slavery juice.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a psychological dynamic that many people have a really hard time breaking out of, because it's a fear-based reaction. People fear the unknown. And this is all they have ever known. This system of slavery is all they have ever known. So to move into something, into an uncharted territory, is an often frightening thing for many people. And, you know, they loathe going there because, you know, nobody's going to be telling you exactly how it has to be. You're going to be inventing that and creating it as you go in a world of true freedom. And that carries with it responsibility, which is another thing people shun and don't want. You know, I'll give you a little anecdotal story in my life and, you know, make this a little bit personal. I'll tell you a story of some interactions that happened between myself and my mother a few years back. And this goes along with, you know, the idea of comfort levels and not wanting to go into uncharted territory and having no other framework or having nothing else to, quote, cling on to or, quote, believe in, and therefore wanting to stay in that comfort zone. When years ago, when I really began to study astrotheology and understand how modern religions were based upon the astrotheological, you know, underpinnings of religion, and how that was the esoteric aspect that was really kind of actually there to keep the core truths, like you talked about earlier, that are at the seed. They're the actual life core at the center of all major cultural religions and mystery tradition teachings, etc. There is that core of truth that lies there. Then there's this esoteric cover story that is the astrotheological teachings that are kind of allegorical, that they allegorically veil these core spiritual truths. Then around that you have the exoteric literal interpretations that are given to the masses and, you know, just get them to comply and fall in line. So, you know, my family has always, of course, other members of my family have always been in that that outer shell, that exoteric, you know, following along, you know, this is what my parents taught me, because, and that's what their parents taught them, and so we go along in line. That's how my family has always been. They're not the types to question and to, you know, seek real answers. It's more comfortable just accepting things and just believing it because you're told to believe it, and that's it, and there, you don't rock the boat. You know, I really had this drive and push since the time I was young, this desire to break away from that and ask questions and challenge things and ask that dangerous question, why, you know, that many people don't want to ask. But when I started really deeply studying astrotheology and understanding it, I wanted to bring this knowledge to some of my family members. So I would engage them in conversation dealing with different religious concepts that had clear parallels to astrotheology. So I could explain to them, hey, you know, Christianity, it's a religion that's all about the sun and the worship of the sun. And it's just putting solar symbolism everywhere. And, you know, it's the story of the sun on the cross of the zodiac. Like you have the story of God's son on the cross. And it's just an allegory. And there's powerful information in that allegory. And it doesn't discount the very core underpinning spiritual truths that lie at the heart of that religion, but you have to really break past these literal interpretations and allegories to see those spiritual truths. So over a period of like about a month, I kept bringing different astrotheological teachings and understandings and explaining allegories to my mother in a pretty forceful way, I will just say. You know, in a way that, you know, was relentless, to a point where borderline people would say, you are forcing this upon this individual. Admittedly, I did that. In a lot of ways, I see it was pretty forceful, and in other ways, I'm not apologetic for it. But she understood it. I kept going back and back and back and hammering the information into this person as best as I could until I felt they had somewhat of an understanding of these parallels regarding this religion that they subscribe to. After that, maybe about a month or two after that, I saw her returning from church. And I said, you know, I told you what that whole thing is all about. And you still attend, and you know, you still go to church and believe in it all. And she said, well, it's not the same now. And I said, well, how so? And she said, I see that everything you were saying is true. I recognize that this is what you're saying that it is, you know, and teaching me about, called astrotheology. And I see all the symbolism. When I go into church, I see all the symbolism that you were talking about, and it's undeniable. I cannot tell you that you are wrong about what you're saying about this. However, I have nothing else. What else is there for me? There's nothing else for me to believe in. So therefore, this is what gives me comfort, and therefore I still go. But she said it's different now because I can't get the same level of comfort. You've ruined that for me. Actually said that to me.
You bastard.
I've ruined the illusion of comfort that was derived from going into this church and believing in this religion and accepting their teachings like blindly without actually questioning it or looking into it analytically or looking at what the origins of it are or the you know, allegorical underpinnings of it are. But, you know, basically recognizing what I was saying is true. And that has kind of ruined the experience for her because, you know, she can actually see the solar symbolism that I talked about over that month. But the answer was, what else do I have? What else is there? What else is there for me to believe in and latch on to and, you know, use as a crutch, so to speak? That's where people's mindset is at.
You're right. And I was just thinking about that in terms of addiction. It's like somebody smoking really, really bad, low-quality weed all their life kind of thing, and then somebody brings along some really, really strong hydroponic stuff, and they smoke some of them, and they're like, whoa, 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 what have I been missing out on, man? And all of a sudden, all that weed that you've been smoking your entire life is just no longer good enough. You want this, except there's no supply. So you've kind of been shown the top of the mountain, but you haven't reached the promised land.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. They see in many ways that what they're being told is a lie, but to create something on their own, or to go into the what I would just call the realm of true spiritual or cosmic adulthood, you know, psychological and spiritual adulthood, emotional adulthood, is too painful. Again, part of it is because this is the only thing they've ever known, and that's a form of addiction. You get so used to it, you get so hooked on it, that when somebody cuts that cord or breaks that chain, they stay there as if it's still attached and say, what else am I supposed to do? And the answer to that is, it's think for yourself, ask questions, understand causal factors about why things are the way that they are. You know, really, it's called accepting personal responsibility and becoming a true adult, leaving the realm of spiritual infancy. And that means taking on personal responsibility to truth. And again, that's something just many people want to refuse. They don't want it. They want to stay in that childhood, in that form of spiritual infancy.
Mm-hmm. Now, in this term of this form of spiritual infancy, I think a lot of us are going through this. Now, when people are at that point, when you ask yourself, what am I supposed to do now? They treat it as a rhetorical question. A question that does not need an answer. And the problem is, that's a wrong way to go about it.
Look,
if you're going to ask a very important, introspective question that has real consequences for your life and maybe the lives of your families, perhaps even the lives of everybody on this world, why would you not go about seeking the answers to that question?
Yes. Practical answers in ways that can actually be applied in the real world, in real life. And when people ask me that question, where do I start? I give them a simple, you know, formula. This is about cleaning up and growing up. Okay? We've put so many pollutants into ourselves, and the pollutants are just constantly reinforced. They're constantly pumped into us on a daily basis. It needs continuous application. The poison has to be continuously applied. Okay? So the first real thing to understand is we have an adulterated condition. I won't use the word adulterated nature. This isn't our nature. How humanity is existing today is not human nature. This is a big fallacy and something that a lot of people get completely wrong because they've been fed that worldview that people are just bad and this is just how humanity is. I don't accept that. I don't see this as human nature. This is the human condition that many people are working hard to change the conditions, because we know that as if we change the condition, we are ultimately going to change the level of consciousness. Okay? They go hand in hand with each other. Yes.
It's not entirely dissimilar from how when you study something, you also change it. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Right.
What was I saying before? Oh, yeah. Perception and reality. I came up with a concept like this. Reality is a lump of clay. Perception is the hands of the artisan that can mold it into a vase. A vase whose form could not have taken shape without the hands of the artisan, and a form which could not exist without the clay. It is not one nor is it the other. It is both intertwined like a together. double helix,
right.
and it kind of rolls over and twists and turns and everything, and there are blurred lines and what have you. But the thing is, both of those lines are always there together, working in harmony. And you're right when you say about this this left brain, right brain paradigm, is that what they're trying to do is split reality from perception and tell people that these are separate, kind of like how you would kidnap a child from its mother at the before the age of 7 as a Jesuit so that you can brainwash that child.
Absolutely. Very profound that these dynamics work hand in hand together. And, you know, while perception isn't reality, and I tell people that what our goal is to align the two, you know, it's about bringing our perception closer into the realm of truth so that it doesn't waver and sway off of truth. And then we're living in harmony with that. And therefore, we're going to create things that are good systems, that are systems which truly serve who we are and where we say we want to go. But if we're in that form of opposition, like you said, they want to always create these opposition, you know, this divide and conquer strategy. And the biggest thing is they want to create internal opposition within us such that, you know, we aren't acting the way that we say we think and the way that we say we feel. If we're in that kind of internal contradiction and opposition, we can't possibly be creating something that's truly good for us. We can't possibly be creating and going in the direction that we say we want to go, because that opposition is always going to take us down a path that we don't want to go. And actually, that's a good learning experience. That form of chaos, that natural form of chaos that happens as a result of doing something the wrong way, but being able to have the freedom to do it the wrong way and learn from that, okay, is healthy. It's like, you know, when you a child touches something, a flame or a really hot surface, and they get burned, they know it's probably a good idea, if you see a flame or a hot surface again, not to touch it, to repeat the same painful experience. Unfortunately, what's happening in our society is we're becoming the child that doesn't get the connection between touching the hot surface and getting the second or third degree burn on their hand, because our society is trying to completely sanitize reality from anything that can possibly do harm to somebody and anything that could possibly, you know, show somebody this is definitely not the right way to go about doing this. We want to sanitize things down to the level of a child. And see, it all comes back down to that. It all comes back down to this notion that what humanity is in a state of infancy that has been kept in that state of spiritual infancy, in this state of spiritual childhood. And they want to continue that state. Again, this is, much of my future work is going to be addressing these questions more deeply and looking at it from a perspective of abandonment issues. Abandonment issues, I feel, are at the root of all of the psychological issues that people are experiencing. It's why we don't want to truly take on personal responsibility. It's why humanity has a lot of issues with self-loathing and the lack of self-respect. Many people feel, you know, we are deserving of the current human condition. You know, that's why they don't even feel that they should try to change it. That, oh, this is just how people are. They're bad. We deserve this. And what can you do anyway? And so why bother to take up an empowered position and actually try to use your will to change it? You're just going to get disappointment on the other end anyway, because you're not going to be able to do that. And anyway, we probably deserve this. It's such a dark and poisoned worldview, and so many people have that worldview. You know, it's like an addict, a drug addict, a really bad drug addict who's like, you know, has ruined their life because of their addiction. And, you know, they've fallen into that mentality of shame, where they feel, I've done such a bad thing to myself that I don't even deserve to come out of this, so why should I even bother trying? This is where I belong. That's how much of humanity feels about the current human condition of slavery. And again, my thesis on this is that's because we have low self-esteem and lack of self-respect. There's a lot of self-loathing going on in the current human condition, and that in turn is driven by parental abandonment issues on not only a personal scale as far as in individuals' actual lives, but I see it as something that's embedded in our ancestral memory because of a lot of events that happened in the ancient human past as well.
I was thinking it was more of a recent effect, specifically inside the truth movement. I think that when you learn this information, when you learn everything that you've been brought up to believe is a lie, you suffer trauma. And I think that almost all of us are suffering a form of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure.
And that occasionally you have episodes, you break out, you get enraged or depressed or these other psychological issues simply because what you were told was reality turned out to be a lie. And so you have to build your whole life from scratch. It's like seeing your house burn down in front of you, except it's the house that you've built inside your own mind about who
That's
you
right.
are and how you view the world. It's like losing your mother, you know, kind of thing. Your whole world falls apart. And I don't think you ever get over that kind of trauma.
Exactly. I've called this ego identification, attachment to the roles that we have played in life, or even worldview identification would be a great term to call it, because it's attachment to a specific way of seeing reality that has been embedded and really deeply nested in the individual's personality. That can be a very, 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 very difficult hole to dig yourself out of, because again, it's uncharted waters. It's uncharted territory. And if you haven't, you know, worked those muscles psychologically, mentally, emotionally, it's like trying to, you know, throw a heavy barbell at somebody who's, you know, their muscles have been atrophied for years and they've been inactive and, you know, complacent and, you know, living a sedentary lifestyle, and they, you know, don't have the strength to do that heavy lifting. It has to be done kind of piecemeal. But I don't think we need to sugarcoat it or patronize people. I think we still need to tell people that that work does need to be done. There isn't an obligation to do that kind of psychological work if we're going to come out of this horrible condition that is really advocating immoral behavior. And that's where we've come into. We've come into a place where humanity as a whole is advocating so much immoral behavior in the name of the state, in the name of government, again, because it's the only system they've ever known, and they don't want the responsibility that comes with taking down an institution that does not serve where we say we want to go, and then having to take on the responsibility to, you know, on the fly, create something new that does serve where we want to go.
You're right. Or not
even create something new isn't even the term, really, Vinny. It's really just acknowledging
what's
already there. What's already there and healing. Yes, absolutely. Doing that work to heal the self. That's not just an automatic process either, as some people who are kind of naive want to think that it is. That takes hard work, time, and effort to do, and a lot of people don't want to invest that time.
And often they're often way too tired because they've got a slave job. And I was thinking about nature, and how does nature give you a poison and a cure at the same time? Because that's what this information is to a large extent. It's actually quite toxic to behold, because often when people are given the negative side of the New World Order, the eugenics programs and what have you, they're not packaging it. Like fruit, for example, fructose can't actually be digested by the body properly. And that's why we got all this problem with obesity in America, with all the high fructose corn syrup that's in absolutely everything. When nature gives you fructose, it packages it with fiber in the fruit. That way it neutralizes it and allows the body to process it. Think about this on a psychological side of things, where here's the truth, it's the fructose, it's good for you, it's got energy and what have you, but unless you've actually got that wonderful fibrous thing called reality behind it, solutions, and having the ability to just deal with this crap that you're feeding yourself.
All right.
Unless you've got both of those things together, you just wind up going to get poisoned and obese in the sense of the word, which means, in a psychological sense, a very unhealthy fathead.
And this dovetails right back into what we were talking about before, solutions. When people ask you, what can I do? What else is there? Practically, what can you do? And they ask that question again. I talk about the idea of it's just a matter of purification. It's getting off of the poison and adding the good stuff that is nutritious. So and this is done on all levels. This has to be done on a physical level first and foremost, which is why many of the people who haven't even begun this journey or this trek or this transformation or whatever you want to call it, this process, and they ask the question, what can I do? I try to explain the first thing to do is to clean up the diet. The physical body has to be cleaned up to the extent that is within your capability, within your power, within your ability to do so. And I think we still largely do maintain it, to a large extent, the ability to do that on our own. Because to my knowledge, nobody is actually forcibly making people eat specific things. They might be influencing their decisions to do that with certain types of marketing and the proclivity of certain types of items on food shelves. But ultimately, it's our decision in the end what we pick up and put in our own mouths. So the physical nutritional aspect of this is one of the first things, and cleaning up the diet and getting off of a lot of these processed foods and high fructose corn syrup and other excitotoxins in the diet. That goes hand in hand with emotional and psychological cleanup. Michael Tessarion, a brilliant researcher who I have a lot of respect for, has often talked about the parallels between the words sanitize and sanity. To become sane, to make someone, to make yourself sane from an insane condition, you're taking yourself from a non-sanitized condition, an unclean and non-purified condition, and sanitizing your mental health, sanitizing your psychological framework. So you're actually doing purification and taking, negative and polluting ideas out of the mind to make it more pure. All of these three things go hand in hand, the physical level, the emotional level, and the psychological level. And when we put those three things together, what we're really doing is cleaning up on the entire spiritual scale. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the goal is. It's to go through that process of spiritual purification and transformation. Again, if we're going to end the system of slavery and build something positive that is truly beneficial to humanity on the other side of that great change.
Yeah, we've got to achieve a form of, I guess it's congruence, swimming together, and balance, right? This is that one concept that is seemed to be thrown right out the window when you look at politics, government, and what have you. They say, oh, well, a balance to an evil left paradigm is an evil right paradigm. No, that's right. That's way over balancing it even more into the evil side, bro. That's not cool, man. And the difficulty is that they don't even realize that they're even doing anything wrong because they right. think they actually believe yep. that they're morally in the right.
Right. Because they've bought into this notion of opposites in the same system. I like the concept of the researcher David Icke. He calls these opposames. I love that term because it's like you're saying, voting for the lesser of two evils is still bringing evil into the world. You're just adding more of that polar dynamic. You're not, changing the dynamic. You're not adding the opposite polar dynamic. This is where these dichotomies come into play, these dialectics that are false choices. It's a brilliant mind control strategy from the perspective of, those who are using it against us. You have to almost have some respect for it as, tactics being employed by the opposition. But when it comes down to it, all this is a simple divide and conquer strategy that we need to see. It's the same thing on both sides. There is no left-right. That paradigm is an illusion. There is no, it's either I need to put my faith in the conservative or I need to put my faith in the liberal. They're all the same thing to get us to go in the same direction, which is more control and ultimately continuing to accept the notion of authority, which is the thing that I keep bringing up, because that's the thing that lies underneath all of this, the concept that there's, you know, this thing called authority, and it exists and it is vested in man, is really the religion that has to be ultimately broken down and done away with. And again, that's something that, since people have been living so long with that addiction, they think that's the solution to everything, is to vest power in certain people and give them a monopoly on violence to go out and allegedly solve problems, when that doesn't solve anything. You know, we're addicted to that. And the uncharted territory that we fear stepping out into is, well, what can we do without that addiction there? How could it be different? Of course, there's a myriad version of solutions that are voluntary that could be enacted, but it would require a fundamental shift in perception and a fundamental detachment from things that we have been psychologically and emotionally attached to for far too long.
Now, if we think about this in terms of getting off an addiction, what people often do is they'll replace it with another drug. Okay, I want to stop. Right. I want to stop smoking cigarettes, so I'll start smoking weed. I want to stop drinking alcohol, so I'll start taking ecstasy. I want to stop taking ecstasy, so I'll start taking mescaline. I want to stop taking mescaline, so I'll start taking ayahuasca. I want to stop taking ayahuasca, so I'll, you know, it just goes on and on and on. There are infinite authorities, infinite religions, because there are infinite scumbags willing to take advantage of weak-minded, disempowered people for their own advantage.
And keep them in that state of psychological infancy, it's so dependence. They never claim... Yes, that's exactly what it is. Never stepping out in an independent sense, claiming your own power and personal responsibility. And again, it's because this muscle has not been used. It has been atrophied. And like you said, it's trading one form of slavery for another. If we hop to the next religion or the next form of authority or the next form of government or the next monetary system, it's not actually taking down the barrier that has been blocking us from the truth, the natural world, the natural system that has already been here, that gives us all the guidelines that we really need to understand. And I've grouped that under the umbrella, of course, the umbrella term natural law. This is what all of these systems are designed to hold us back from a fundamental understanding of, because only a fundamental understanding of natural law can ever liberate our species and bring true freedom to us. And without that understanding, we're going to keep doing what you just described very eloquently, replacing one addiction for another addiction, one set of chains for another set of chains. This is why in so many revolutions that have happened in the past, physical armed rebellions, a new form of dictatorship or a new form of oppression has always come in and very quickly right afterward. So, you know, if we're going to avoid that scenario when this system eventually breaks down and crumbles, which it needs to do, we need to prepare that psychologically, and we need to be in positions where we're going to be able to reach out to people in an effective way with certain skill sets and communication capabilities, I can't stress the importance of being able to clearly communicate with people and illustrate concepts in ways that they can make sense of.
It's a form of psychological articulation kung fu to a degree,
sure.
You know, sort of like a monk will practice his stretches and what have you,
sure,
for decades, and then eventually he's like the ultimate master and what have you. And I think that's really what we're doing to a large degree, is we are creating a new religion to a degree that is a complete antithesis to what religion actually is. It's something that you can believe in, but not something that's illusionary, that we're just telling you to believe in so that we can have power over you. We're showing you what the facts are so that you can work things out for yourself, so that you don't get duped by other religions again.
Right.
And I'm not saying that all religions are bad. There are many, many Christians that I've met who are absolutely onto it. Best people that you'll ever meet, very logical, very reasonable. They know about the New World Order, they know about the occult, and yet they still believe in moral obligations to do good. And that's inherently what they do their entire life. I got no argument with that kind of use of religion,
sure,
whatsoever.
Sure.
The positive use of religion is not lying in what you're allowed to do, but it lies within what you are restrained from doing by your beliefs. Right.
In other words, it is apophatic. It takes natural law into account by saying what actions, to understand the actions that I may morally perform, I need to understand the actions that I may not morally perform, that are immoral to perform. Okay, so it's an apophatic way of looking at natural law. It's defining what a right is by understanding truly what a wrong is, what is wrongdoing, what are actions that cause suffering to others, and then choosing willfully not to do those things, and therefore you're only engaging in behaviors that are moral rights. I like your idea that this is a religion from a positive sense or a positive connotation or definition of the word. There's really two different definitions of the word religion. I've often used religion in my teachings from the Latin verb religare, which is where it comes from etymologically to us out of Latin, the English word
religion.
To hold
the mind back or something?
Well, religare simply means to tie back or to bind, to hold back or to thwart from forward progress in anything. Okay, so in other words, they would maybe the Romans would have used the word religare to describe tying a steed to a post. Okay, you have bound him there so he cannot move forward or move away from that point. It's stopping the forward motion or the forward progression. So that's a form of tying up or binding or holding there, holding in place. That's what a false religion does. And all the false religions of the world are money, authority, scientism, politics, government. I'm not talking about real, true science that goes where the evidence leads. I'm talking about, you know, science that is all based in funding and money and, you know, status. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's all about just social status and who has tenure at a university and who's written the top books on a topic. And so anything new evidence that comes along that may contradict that has to be buried and suppressed. That I call that scientism. And of course, the New Age movement is one of these religions. Now, I would group some of the cultural religions in with that, although I would say at the very core, if you strip away all the exoteric junk and astrotheological underpinnings, you do have a deep esoteric core there that is true spirituality. But it's so muddied; those waters are so muddied and so buried with the allegories and with the exoteric stuff that's there to keep the people from those core truths. That I almost say they you know, I don't even want to just say completely abandon all of that, but it definitely needs to be looked at in a new light and say, you know, you need to realize you have to go beyond this. This might be a stepping stone to go to where you're at because it does, they do all in their own way teach moral behavior. But it's what many people have likened to, you know, reaching, you know, not quite the apex of the mountain. You're high on the mountain, but you're not up at the very tip top at the apex, which is where we really need to go, which is truth becoming our religion, okay, and going wherever the evidence leads us, regardless of what you have to, you know, cut away, regardless of what you have to release attachment from in that process of making that climb. So in the positive sense, right, the word religare did not just mean to tie up and bind and thwart from forward progress, which is what I would categorize a false religion as. But in a positive sense, I would look at a true religion as the other definition of religare in Latin was to reunite, to bring back together something that had been scattered. Something that had been broken apart or dismembered, you're gathering those pieces and you're bringing them back together as a whole. And this is what we need to do with ourselves, with our psyche, which is scattered and traumatized and broken in a million pieces and shards. You know, we need to gather ourselves and remember who we are and remember from dismemberment, bring ourselves back together, bring the elements of our consciousness back into non-contradiction, into unity consciousness, such that that we are a being that as we think, so we feel, and so we act, and there's no contradiction between those three modalities of consciousness. In that sense, we would be practicing true religion, which is to reunite ourselves with the truth. So that's why I kind of like the idea of what you're saying. What we're ultimately trying to bring into fruition and bring onto the world stage is a new religion, in a sense, from the positive interpretation or the positive etymological definition of that word, to reunite. And what we're reuniting ourselves and hopefully other people with is the truth about what's going on here on this planet, and the truth about how we need to align ourselves with natural law if we're going to really create a world that's worth living in.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, and we'll go to a break just in a second here, Mark. I just want to get the statement out. The word religare, to hold back, to tie you in place or whatever, I think that is one of actually the best parts about religion. There's certain things that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to hurt people. You're not allowed to kill people. You're not allowed to steal their stuff and what have you. And these are the basic things that, again, I just wanted to reiterate, and I've already said it, but I think it bears repeating. You've got to be able to restrain yourself from doing bad things if you want to truly do a good thing.
That's right. And that's that positive connotation of even what can be seen as negative, to hold back or thwart from forward progress. If you're using these principles of natural law to hold yourself back from doing harm to other people,
not hold
then
others
that becomes
back,
very,
but hold
right,
yourself back.
It has to be practiced internally by an act of your own will. Then I would say it becomes a very positive connotation, and that's religion in the true sense. Absolutely. Great point.
Indeed. Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com is my very special guest, and we'll be back in just a few moments for the second hour.
Pass me so fast, I don't think I'll catch up with it. A politician selling me out of my country. I've got an inkling that don't care about me in the summer. In the city when those girls are so pretty, they distract me from all the important things as I get sold quietly into slavery in the summer. Yeah, in the city.